This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In a recent column for the Burlington Free Press, economist Art Wolf highlighted Vermont's birth rate, specifically how very low it is. While the birth rate in the U.S. in general is low, Vermont's is even lower. And Wolf said that nearly 6,000 babies born in Vermont in 2015 was the lowest total number since the mid-1800s. What Wolf admitted he didn't really have an answer for was why. But parents and non-parents certainly do. The decision to have a child is often a fraught one that involves a lot of calculation, reflection, and conversation. Of course, that's not always the case. But clearly, with a continually declining birth rate, it's more of a discussion than it may once have been. And the decision many Vermonters are making is to delay having children, to have fewer children than previous generations did, or to have none at all. So we'd love to know why and what's gone into your thought process about whether or not to have kids and when and how many. Tell us. You can go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Here to help guide the conversation is Vince Baldock, a professor of anthropology and sociology at St. Michael's College. Welcome back to the show, Professor.
Thank you very much, Jane.
And Jocelyn Adams, who co-owns the Burlington, Vermont Moms blog. Nice to have you back, Jocelyn, as well.
Thank you.
So, Professor Baldock, just for context here, how much has the Vermont birth rate been dropping, and do you have a sense of why?
Well, I've got several hypotheses, but let's look at just how much it is dropping. At the peak of the baby boom, we had about 9,300 births every year. And now, as you note, it's closer to 6,000, a little under 6,000. And California, of course, a much larger state, has much more than that every week. And so it's slow. We look at the average number of children born to a woman. We call it the total fertility rate. In the United States, it's 1.9, and that's already low because it's beneath replacement level fertility. But in Vermont, it's 1.63, which is well below replacement level. The peak of the baby boom, to give you a perspective, it was 3.7. And the Hutterites hit an all-time high in the 1930s, a small religious group, at 11, which is rather remarkable. But other New England states also have very low rates. Vermont is not that far from all the other New England states. It all run at about 1.6. There are a few other states in the Midwest and in the West that are much higher, but even much higher is only about 2.2 or 2.3. So Utah, South Dakota, Texas, Oklahoma, they all have much higher rates than Vermont.
Jocelyn, I can hear that you have another guest with you who wants to chime in as well. You have two children, a 2.5-year-old and a 9-week-old, and the 9-week-old is with you?
He is, yes. he was, of course, sleeping right before the show started, and now he is waking up.
Well, that's fine. This is a show about kids, and you have kids, and it is allowed. He can be as loud as he wants. So you've obviously made the decision to have kids. Was it one that for you was a big conversation, or was this something that was just sort of an assumption for you?
So I would say that since I was probably a little girl, I had always assumed that I was going to have children. I wasn't one who imagined my wedding. What I imagined was having a daughter and living in some big city and the two of us just, I don't know, us against the world. I think that was because I was one of four and I wanted my mom's undivided attention. But when I met my now husband, I was ready to have children. Probably, I would say, when I was around 24, so that would have been back in 2011 or 2010, and we weren't married yet. So it was definitely a conversation that my husband and I had. We decided to wait. We waited until after we were married and until I was a little bit more secure in my job. And so it was more of a conversation of when and then how many children we would have, not if we would have children.
Vince Baldock, what about for you? You have no infant with you, I will say.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we've had three children. We've spread them over 17 years. So in a way, we've had three only children, and it's been wonderful. It sounds like Jocelyn is following what we sometimes call the success sequence. It's college, then marriage, then children. And increasingly, it's delayed. It's taking a little longer than in the past. But it's quite different for college graduates than it is for other people.
Because college graduates tend to delay even longer?
They delay longer. And it's one of the major reasons. It's one of my hypotheses about why Vermont has a lower overall birth rate. And it's that we have a higher educational level. And we have a higher percentage of women who are college graduates. We have one of the, I think, the highest rate of high school completion. And it delays things, but for other complicated reasons, it also puts women in a position of having higher aspirations. It makes the children more expensive in a way because they have higher aspirations for the children too, and they spend more time, more money with them. And if a woman has a college education, she is giving up more money, more occupational opportunity usually to take care of the children. Even if it just keeps her out of the labor market for a short while, there's an opportunity lost there.
We're talking about the decision to have kids or not have kids and how much soul searching it goes into for many individuals and couples. And maybe you are still in the midst of it. You can tell us what factors into the decision for you about having kids in Vermont. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. And we're getting some really thoughtful responses from listeners who are thinking pretty carefully about this. Tara says, we are both self-employed and still building our house and our careers. It seems we have no time for kids yet. I'm 37. My husband is 40. I'm not sure how we would afford them either. We do consider adoption in the future. We also think it's okay not to have kids. If it happens, great. But if not, there are lots of kids out there that need homes. And the population is certainly large enough as it is. Christina says, I always thought I'd be married, have children, and would never be on any of the public benefits that were the staple and shame of my childhood. My high medical costs plus a narrow college major sealed my fate to having to be on public medical benefits a few years after college. It was hard enough to find apartments, getting Social Security, and being single. Having a child would have sentenced me to family public housing, which is not a nice place to be, even in Vermont, she writes. The pecking order of tenants and the constant invasion by pest control and housing inspectors would have sent me over the edge. Being on welfare is a social wound I would not willingly inflict on a child. So some of Christina's reasons for not having a child. Melissa says, with low wages, which in reality are middle class, and a high cost of living, our family had to wait until our first child was entering kindergarten before we could have another, because we could not afford to have a stay-at-home parent and could also not afford two daycare or preschool payments. And with that said, we are now too old to have any more. Jocelyn Adams, you, as I said, are a co-owner of the Burlington, Vermont Moms blog. Are you finding that financial considerations, like what we just heard from Christina and Melissa and Tara, are factoring into parents' decisions about whether or not to become parents and how many kids to have and how to space them out?
Absolutely. I know personally, I grew up very low income in New Hampshire, and one of my fears was actually to have the same pattern that my mom had, which was she accidentally got pregnant with me when she was 19 years old. And so I know that my big goal was I wanted to wait until I got out of college. I wanted to be in my early 20s. But I had always assumed that once I had my daughter that I would stay at work. I didn't think that we could afford for me to stay home. But I worked in a very high stressful job. I was a DCF social worker. I was in child protection in St. Albans. And after being able to stay home with her for a little while, I realized that I just couldn't be as far away as my job would take me up to the Canadian border and that I needed to figure out a way to be able to stay home. And so luckily, my husband and I were able to figure out financially where to cut costs to be able for me to stay home, and then the opportunity to first work for Burlington Vermont Moms blog and then to purchase the blog with my two co-owners became available. And so now I'm at home with both children working, I would say, anywhere between 20 to 40 hours a week, although the way I work, it's funny. I'm usually on a yoga ball baby wearing my infant son with my toddler going around my feet, often telling me to get off my computer and trying to make sure she's still doing enriching activities. But it's not even really a thought process for me at this point to even think to have a third or a fourth child, although I was one of four. It definitely, we couldn't afford it, and we definitely could not have afforded I think having our second son, if I had stayed at work just with the cost of daycare, and I hear this from parents all of the time, many of what the three different women who wrote in were talking about is what I hear from moms all the time. They're delaying. They'd like to have maybe their children 2 years apart, but they're having to do it longer periods of time apart, or they're just not being able to have as many children as they want because daycare especially is, it's such a money eater, and it's the price of it is skyrocketing, especially if you want good quality daycare. Or I was trying to think of people I know that don't have children and who are not planning on having children, and nobody comes to mind, although I have several female friends who are in their 30s, going into their late 30s, who don't have children, who hope to, but they're just not in a position yet to be able to, and who knows in the future if they will or they won't.
Yeah, that question of childcare is a big one, and certainly one that's being discussed politically in Vermont as well. And we just saw a report come out talking about the real dire need for high quality, affordable childcare in Vermont and how hard it is for parents to find it. And as you might imagine, we're getting several comments about that as well. Daniela says, if you decide to have kids, definitely get on a childcare waiting list pretty much as soon as you decide to start trying. It sounds ridiculous, but it's reality if you need any infant spots. Erica says the lack of infant care, affordable or not, is a huge factor in Vermont. It was a very difficult aspect of child number one for me and my husband, and a large part of why we haven't pursued child number two. And Brandy in Brattleboro says, I know many people who are holding off on second children and in some cases first children because of the fear of the cost of high quality childcare, or even worse, the inability to find a place with openings. I said half jokingly the other day that the Brattleboro area reminds me of the movie Baby Boom, where every mother of an infant or soon to be pregnant mother already had their child on the list somewhere in Manhattan because nothing was open. It's a very sad situation because these are decisions we want to make out of love, not out of fear of cost. So lots of questions here, lots of people sharing their thoughts. Let's go to Nora calling in from Williston. Hi, Nora. Go ahead.
Hi. So I was also going to comment about the cost of childcare, but I'll talk instead about my husband and I moved to Vermont a number of years ago, and I wasn't able to get a job in my field in which I actually had a master's degree. So we decided to have children since I wasn't employed at the time. And then when we were planning to have a second one, I had been doing part-time work, and then I was not able to actually turn down a number of jobs because I didn't want to go, especially to a part-time job, and then have to take maternity leave. So that those choices have definitely affected my career opportunities, particularly in the fields in which I have a master's degree. So that has also been a difficult choice and factor in having children.
Nora,
and timing of things.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Vince Balduck, I mean, this question of higher educational attainment and higher career attainment for women in the past generation or so is a big factor in families, partners, single women, single people deciding to have children and whether or not and how to do that. And it can become really difficult for women who are trying to balance a career or a two-parent, two-working family and children.
Oh, absolutely. I want to say two things about this. One, I'm impressed with the degree in which every caller and person who's written in has been rationally thinking about this. Pros and cons, costs, waiting lists. That's been extraordinary in the world. This is very new. And it's also very common among better educated women. I was just looking at a couple of surveys recently, one from the Department of Health, and it estimates that only 54% of children born in Vermont are planned. Now, that's a slightly low number. The other surveys I've seen done by the Department of Health nationally suggest that the number of unplanned births is 37%. So that's a higher rate of planned, but still – that's a huge percentage. And for virtually all of the callers to be talking about planning is quite a salute to them to be able to do that. In fact, accident is a major reason for having children. The other point I want to make about child care, and it's obviously very important. It's incredibly expensive and very hard to get good child care. We all know that, but moms in particular. The USDA every year comes out with an estimate about how much it costs to raise a child to age 18. And it varies depending on the social class of the family. If they're high income, it's more expensive. If they're low income, it's less expensive because they don't have as expensive expectations. The figure for 2014 was $245,000 to raise a child to age 18. That's not college. Not college. And so child care is a smaller part of that equation than many other factors. One of the largest being housing, because people ratchet up their housing. They want another room. And that means a bigger house, more heat, more electricity, bigger mortgage. And that really equals more. And that oftentimes lasts for 20 years or a lifetime. Child care is only a couple of years. So just
well,
to put that
full-time
into the
child
mix,
care at least.
That's right.
You know, it's interesting when you talk, Vince Baldock, about this idea of weighing pros and cons. And Erin in Winooski says she and her husband are in their early 30s and have talked about having kids. But they're looking at the economics of it. And she writes, many people have told me that when it comes to kids and money, you, quote, just find a way to make it work. This is something that was never said to me, she says, when my husband and I were thinking about buying a house. When we did buy our house, we had to prove to multiple people and institutions that our mortgage payments would be within our means. I imagine if we were going to adopt a child, there may be similar financial vetting processes. But she says, are there tools or counselors like the Vermont Housing Finance Agency out there that can help people figure out if it's financially feasible to have a child? Should you really trust that you'll find a way to financially make it work and have a kid, even if you think it would put your family in financial stress?
Yeah, having a child is surely the most important decision we make in our life. It's more important than the decision to get married. A child is with us forever. So it's ironic that we don't have the same type of financial counseling available for that. That's an excellent idea. But remember, let me go back to a point I made earlier. The biggest cost after housing, after the direct costs, are the opportunity costs that it has on either the husband or the wife, the mother or father. It's almost always the woman who has to give up something of her occupation for a number of years. And then she's back in the queue. She's back in the line behind many of the men or women who didn't have children. And she may never make that up. So in some estimates that I've made on this, if the direct costs are $245,000, the indirect cost for a teacher, if she takes 5 years off school, not many do that, but if she stops out of the workforce for 5 years and then tries to go back in, she will have lost closer to $750,000. But that includes the assumption that she would have saved and invested some of that along the way.
We got a note from Travis who says, my husband and I have discussed adoption for years but held off on that lengthy process until both of our careers were firmly on track. Now that his legal career is beginning to take off and my design business is going strong, the idea of adopting is firmly on my mind. Now the discussion has shifted to our desire to maintain our avid love of travel. How does a young couple balance travel and young children? Good question, Travis. And we got a note from EE who says, you are unlikely to get many responses from those who choose to be childless or even those who just ended up that way because of social stigma. Those who are not silenced by the stigma are often over-the-top vocal about their childlessness, and they often consider it the morally superior position. But you always sense the acute defensiveness behind this position. And who can blame them when we consider the childless to be defective in our society? Well, you know, actually, we do have some people who are talking about not having children. We'll get into that next as we continue this discussion on Vermont Edition about the decision to have children, not have them, when to have them, how many to have, and all of the social and economic factors that go into those conversations. You can share your thoughts with us. Call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about why Vermonters choose to have or choose not to have kids. There are lots of considerations, social, cultural, financial. But we are definitely not having babies in this state at a very fast clip, for better or for worse. We're taking a look behind the statistics and getting stories from you about what factors into your decision around kids. You can call 1-800-639-2211. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We're also talking today with Jocelyn Adams, one of the owners of the Burlington, Vermont Moms blog. She has two young children, and with St. Michael's College sociologist Vince Baldock, who, as he mentioned, has three children. We got a note from Mike who says, honestly, I probably won't have kids for a few years at least. I'm 28 because it's just too expensive. Even with dual incomes, my wife and I barely pull enough to save for a down payment on a house, our first goal. And having a kid on top of that would seal our fate as renters for years. The main issues at hand are low wages, relative high cost of living, and an insane housing market within 40 minutes of Burlington. Mike says, I'm now looking for work in southern New Hampshire because it's much more reasonable in some areas. Marjorie says, I think it's a good thing that the population is declining. There are too many of us using up the Earth's resources, causing pollution, using energy, wonderful as we are. Isn't it possible that larger world population will cause more suffering, more have-nots? I don't believe that we should be concerned with who supports the old, like I heard yesterday regarding Social Security. If we each had at the most two children, the population would float down and allow room for other species and wild areas, rather than degrade all the resources and crowd out the natural areas. But we should do this without having laws to limit family size. Unending growth, Marjorie says, is not a sustainable goal, no longer appropriate for humans. Quality of life is a much better goal. And let's go to Hallie, calling in from Springfield. Hi, Hallie. You're on the air.
Hi there. I could ditto for me on Marjorie. My comment was I knew by the time I was a late teenager that I was not going to have children because I didn't want to put any more pressure on this precious earth. There are enough humans already for all the reasons you just quoted, Marjorie. And I am now 66. I have never regretted my decision. I thought I would adopt if I really wanted children, but there were many other things that came to my life to fulfill. So, and lots of contact with young people in many other ways. So, yes, I'm surprised that there aren't more people. And the stigma, there's a stigma for not having children. I never knew that, but that's news to me.
So that's not something you feel, Hallie. You don't feel like there is a cultural feeling that you should have children, especially as a woman.
Maybe I'm independent enough that if that were a stigma, I'd want to push it out of the way. But no, that isn't going to bother me. So I'm just surprised that more people aren't thinking about the overload on this planet and how we can give back by not having. I think Vermont is wonderful. I think we're leaders in many things in Vermont, and we can be leaders in not having so many children and hope the world will follow us.
Well, Hallie, thanks for sharing your thoughts and your experience with us. I really appreciate that. Let's get another from Morgan in Jeffersonville. Hi, Morgan. Go ahead.
Hi. Hallie gives me a lot of hope. I'm 26 years old. I've never wanted to have children. It's never been a desire. I grew up with a lot of foster children in my house, and so that changed my perspective on children, I feel. And I don't know that I necessarily want children, but I would be much more inclined to adopt.
Well, Morgan, thanks for calling in. I appreciate your thoughts and your thoughts as a 20-something about where you see your future. Another one here from Maura in Montpelier. Hi, Maura. Go ahead.
Hi. I am a non-breeder. I am 16 years old. I'm happier every day that I did not have children. And my carbon footprint is way less than anybody who has one child. So I made that decision out of responsibility to children and the planet and humanity. And I'm thrilled to hear other people finally. I was, when I was younger, I was told I was too scared, I was too wounded. It was always a very conscious decision to not have children. And I'm really happy I did it.
Well, Maura, I appreciate your response here, too, and your thoughts. We did just see a big study come out that's been making national news headlines as well about the happiness or lack thereof of parents, especially in this country, which is attributed mostly to economic benefits and the lack thereof that are that some families enjoy in other countries, but that American parents are not finding satisfaction in being parents. Jocelyn Adams, I'd love to get you back in this conversation as the parent of two young children. I, as a parent myself, can sympathize with the stress of being a parent. Do you find it satisfying, though, for you to be a mother and to be a parent?
So I want to go back to something that Vince actually had made a point before the break, which was how women especially, but usually at least one parent, ends up making a very large sacrifice when they have children. And I would say that I find that to be true. When I found out I was pregnant with my first, I had the opportunity to apply for what would have been my dream job. It would have been everything my master's degree had prepared me for. However, I forego the initial interview and moving on with the process because I would not have been able to have a long maternity leave. However, when I weigh that against the love that I have for both of my children and everything that they've brought to my life, I don't feel like I've lost anything. You know, maybe in 10 years I may be going, you know, I could have had that. But I think no matter what, the perspective that I do have Caroline and I do have Augie and the joy that they do bring to our lives, it outweighs that financial piece that it could have brought to our lives. However, I will say, especially now adding the second child, that the overall happiness, you know, when you are getting maybe 3 hours in a row of sleep at night and you have two young children under the age of three, the stress and the happiness level right now is probably the lowest it's been in my life overall. Not to say that I'm not happy to have my children, but there's a lot of things that we've given up right now. However, I know that they'll come back. I know that my husband and I will be able to regain some of our independence. We'll be able to do some of the activities that we're not being able to do right now when you have an infant who's literally glued to you because you're nursing and he won't take a bottle. But that just comes with time, and that's what I continuously tell myself. And I think that's part of why I was ready to have children when I was that I think I had a pretty clear view of what parenthood would be like, and that there's some give and take, but that's okay. And another point I just wanted to go back to is that I do believe that there is some stigma when it comes to choosing not to have children, but I also think that there is stigma when you choose to have more than two children. On our blog post with Burlington Vermont Mom's Blog, we're one of 60 sister sites across the nation, and so I know I can think of a couple blog posts right off the top of my head where even the words of in the title are in the defense of the third child or in the defense of the fourth child. And I joked with Sam, who's one of the producers of the show, that there should be a in defense of the adult who chose not to have children, that would be a great blog post for Burlington Vermont Mom's Blog. And I think even just those words in the defense of shows that people are feeling like they're not with the majority or that they need to defend their choices.
Yeah, there's a lot to chew on here when we start talking about children, not having children, when to have children, how many to have. Blythe wrote in to say, I deliberately had a child while I was in graduate school because I had protections that I wasn't guaranteed once I got into the job market. UVM had to hold my place if I had to take an extended leave. I only missed one class, she writes. Vermont has very few employers who would do the same. Ben in Shaftesbury says, my lovely wife and I have two children who we did not plan on. One is a sophomore in college, the other a senior in high school. I'm a seventh-generation Vermonter, and I fear I may be the last, as wages in our area are very low and taxes hefty. Looking at a new work vehicle over the weekend that just cost a few thousand less than our first house, and I drop $14,000 a year for the eldest son's college. I'm not sure I'll survive, let alone them. Steve says it seems that most advanced economies, like Japan, for example, see a drop in fertility rates. The more you know, the less likely you are to have kids. Although Steve says, I have three, so perhaps I'm pretty ignorant. But Vince Baldock, what about this question of the economy and economics? Because it's we're talking here right now mostly about our personal decisions and listeners sharing what went into their factors. And some of that is certainly based on the economic realities that they face. But when it comes to a state like Vermont looking at a population decline and looking at an older population and not as many young people coming in to fill the ranks of workers, it can have some pretty dire economic consequences, which we've seen in places like Japan, as Steve writes.
It's certainly true, yeah. And Japan really is declining. We're not declining yet. Vermont's not declining yet. The United States is far from it, and we're still growing even though we're below replacement level. That's a complex explanation, but it's true. I think there have been many excellent points made, including about the sustainability issue. It's a good one. But on the other hand, in order for the economy to continue to prosper, we need a better balance. And booms and busts in children always create economic problems. The economy breaks a little bit. And with the huge fraction of the graying of Vermont that we're facing, we're going to have problems taking care of the elderly, but not just that, taking care of people of all ages. Someone has to do the work. We need the entrepreneurs. We need the creativity. We need the workers. We need people to pay the taxes to preserve the infrastructure. And if a population is really declining, they don't have that. And so a steady population I'll stop there. That just a steady population, then we can plan the economy a lot better. But when you have booms and busts like we see too often, it creates all sorts of economic problems.
Let's go to Jenny, who's calling in from Rutland. Hi, Jenny. Go right ahead. Your thoughts. Oh, we don't have Jenny on the line, but we do have Cassie, who's calling in from Springfield. Hi, Cassie. Go ahead. You there, Cassie? All right.
Hi. My partner and I are considering having kids in the next couple of years, and I feel very worried about the cost, the high cost of health care. We're planted firmly in the middle class, and so we wouldn't have access to programs like Dr. Dinosaur, but the rising cost of health care is just too much, and I often wonder how we'd pull it off.
Yeah, Cassie, that is a big question. It's not even necessarily the cost of healthcare just for you and your partner, but the question of healthcare for the whole family. Certainly one that I do hear people talking about as an issue because unresolved. You know, Dr. Dinosaur is a program we were just talking about with one of the candidates for lieutenant governor earlier last week about whether that may be expanded to include families of all income levels, but certainly a big issue. And I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Stephanie's on the line from Pittsford. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling in because my husband and I originally decided we wanted to have one child, and he's now 15. And when he was about 7, we decided, you know, this is really our last chance, and we both felt like we wanted to have another. But it didn't work out the way we planned, and it took another 5 years, and we were surprised with our daughter, which was a wonderful surprise. But at the same time, when she was a newborn, I was offered a full-time tenure-track teaching position. I had been an adjunct for 10 years. And I just decided that I could not take that position because I did not have full-time quality daycare in place, and I was being asked to make the decision right away. And so I had to say no. And it's a bit of a regret, but I certainly don't regret my two beautiful children. And we're happy, but we're paying our own health insurance. And we certainly have less money than we would have if I could have taken that position. I worked really hard to get to that point, and the timing just seemed to come together that I couldn't have both things at once. And so I certainly relate to the theme of women having to sometimes give something up. Although I certainly hope that every woman who does feels like they have gotten everything that they wanted in the end, and that's how I feel.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, Stephanie. I appreciate hearing your perspective. Certainly, you know, there are calculations that can go into planned pregnancies that, you know, as Vince Baldock was talking about earlier, so many pregnancies are unplanned and so many children who are born are born in unplanned pregnancies that perhaps that equation of is this going to satisfy all of the boxes that I'm hoping to tick with this are not necessarily ones that every parent makes, and we do understand that. But certainly a question that so many people have. Emerald says, what I am seeing in my peer group of 30-somethings is fewer couples are having kids. That includes ones who are married and own homes. They don't want to be tied down and want to be free to travel. Also, the cost is just not desirable. I think the no-kids family has lost its taboo. In the 80s and before, if you didn't have kids, that was odd. Now that families come in all shapes and sizes, I don't think people view kids as the cornerstones anymore. So to that point, Vince Baldock, are we just going to continue to see this trend? I know that you don't have a crystal ball either, but what do you think?
It certainly seems it. As we look all over the world, there's one direction fertility's been going in, and that's down.
All right. Well, yeah. For better or for worse, yeah. We're going to have to deal with that economically and certainly as a state. As we each make our own personal choices, we're going to have to look together at how we address the new economic realities. Vince Baldock is a professor of sociology and anthropology at St. Michael's College. Thanks for having this conversation with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Jocelyn Adams is one of the co-owners of the Burlington, Vermont Moms blog. Jocelyn, thank you for talking with us, especially with kids around, as you said, at your ankles. Appreciate your time as well.
Thank you.
Coming up. Sit down with the Adjutant General Stephen Cray to talk about issues facing the Vermont Guard. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. President Obama recently announced that he is slowing the drawdown of the U.S. military in Afghanistan and plans to leave 8,400 troops in that country through the end of the year and through the end of his term. In the early years of the U.S. involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, members of the Vermont National Guard played a significant role in troop deployments, sending units over to the war zone at a higher rate than other states. Here to talk with us about what's happening in the Guard right now is the state's Adjutant General, Major General Stephen Cray. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Are there any current deployments of Vermont Guard troops?
Just no large-scale formations that are deployed currently. We continue to have, individual soldiers and airmen deploy for several months up to a year at different locations, but no large-scale formations right now or actually in the near future.
So no units are planning to deploy, because we have had, even when we're not in Iraq and Afghanistan, smaller units deploy for shorter time periods to other countries.
So we'll have over the next several years small, maybe five people at a time who are doing, you know, significant amount of work for the, you know, for us over there, but no large scale formations in the next couple of years.
In the early years, as I mentioned, of these conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, there were Vermont Guard members who had deployed multiple times for long stints in these countries. We know that there are far fewer U.S. troops on the ground in those countries now than there were in 2005 and 2010. Is it just numbers that are contributing to the fact that the Vermont Guard isn't deploying, or is there a change in U.S. military strategy that's leading to fewer or no current deployments of that size and scale?
It's probably a matter of timing, to be honest. So the Air Guard deployed a number of times, as you mentioned, during 2002, 2005, 2007, and same thing for the Army. Our largest deployment was in 2010, and so there's a cycle to the training for the Army, and it's about a 5-year cycle. So we went through an intense training period after we got back from Afghanistan, and actually last year was our available year, they call it, where the Vermont National Guard was at the highest readiness levels, but we're not used in the rotation. So now we're back into a cycle where we're actually at the beginning of that cycle, and the next opportunity for large scale deployments would be probably somewhere around 2019 or 20 because of this train up that it takes. And for the Air National Guard, as you know, as we move towards the F-35 deployment, there's going to be less opportunity for that for our unit, because we're going to go through training for the F-35. So that won't be until into the 20s as well for our Air Guard.
Are the F-35 fighter jets still expected to be on the ground in Burlington in 2017?
Yeah, 19. So, yeah, in the fall of 2019 is when they're expected to be here. Yep.
When the debate was ongoing before the U.S. military had made the decision to base the F-35 fighter jets in Burlington, one of the arguments made by the Guard in favor of having the jets here was because it provided a significant mission for the Vermont Air National Guard that would contribute to keeping the Air Guard here, to keeping it strong, and to limiting the possibility of having to downsize the Guard. So, you know, there are still questions about the F-35s and lawsuits that are pending, but that gives the Air Guard a mission in Vermont. Does the Army Guard have a mission that's ongoing that would prevent it from seeing sizable decreases in the amount of personnel here?
Yeah, we do. The Vermont Army National Guard, the brigade, the 86, in particular, the 86 Combat Brigade, has been chosen as a test pilot to link with the active duty as an associate unit, and with the goal of increasing the readiness levels of the reserve component. So you link the active duty with the Guard, and you train together over a number of years with the goal of actually increasing both the entire readiness level of that unit. So it just goes to show you that the U.S. Army believes in the capabilities and the men and women of the Vermont Army National Guard to be able to do that mission. So, yes, I think that is one of those things that says, you know what, the Army knows that we have a mission to do for this country. They know that we're capable of doing the mission here for the state of Vermont, and that will continue for the future.
Has having the Guard been in the Joint Chiefs made a difference in that realm?
I think it has. You know, General Grass, who is set to retire here in a few weeks, has been a strong advocate for the Vermont National Guard and has a voice in a different place, you know, a seat at the table, as they say. And that's important for the Guard because the Guard is not like it used to be, right? You know, since 9/11, the country has invested a lot of resources into the National Guard to make them as capable as possible and as ready. And the fact is that the U.S. Army and the United States Air Force rely on the reserve components to do the mission. They can't do it without it. So we've made an investment into that, and it's smart for the United States to continue to do that training and to invest in the equipment for the National Guard.
I haven't been able to find any numbers on this, but I have heard anecdotally that there are reductions in personnel happening at the Guard. Can you address that?
So the National Guard last year for the Army was at 350,000. This year, and by the end of 2017, or coming up in 1 October for the fiscal year for the U.S. government, the numbers are going to drop to 342,000. So there are slight reductions, but we haven't changed the numbers at the Vermont Army National Guard. What we are doing, though, is the full-time support that goes along with the number of soldiers that you have in your units is being slightly reduced. So we are, but that's happening through attrition. So instead of hiring new full-time workforce, you know, we're going to just continue to draw down slightly. So the number of soldiers over time will drop slightly, but not significantly here in Vermont.
So there are no effectively what we would call layoffs happening? Nobody's being told that they're out of a job?
Correct. Yeah. So we're just not able to hire on as many full-time personnel as we have been in the past. The brigade is going through a transition period over the last year, and we'll finish that up during this year with certain different capabilities that the Army needs. And the numbers will change slightly on the number of soldiers that we have. But overall, there's not significant change, and no, there's nobody that's being laid off, if you will.
I read that the Vermont Guard is participating in a cybersecurity exercise at the end of this month, and from what I've read, it's designed to test the military's ability to respond to an attack on military computer systems. What do you think the military's weakness is in this realm, and how important it is to be prepared for cyber attacks as part of military readiness?
Yeah, so overall, cybersecurity is something that the entire world is grappling with right now, obviously, and for the military especially important. And to safeguard sensitive information is always key. There are a number of actors out there that want to do harm and know that they can do harm through cyber. And so providing a security, cybersecurity is important, and it's an important mission for the Department of Defense and including the National Guard. So we have teams that are being formed and trained right now to, yes, as you mentioned, deal with the military side, but we also, because the National Guard has a state responsibility, that we're still exploring exactly the legalities of being able to supply support to state entities and perhaps even private industry, like, you know, power and water and those kinds of things. So right now we know we have expertise to do sort of a liaison work. And what we're working, what this exercise will test, is our ability to actually be able to help, you know, combat an attack. And so this is an opportunity to do it on a closed network, you know, and actually get some good lessons learned out of it.
We just have about 30 seconds left, but I want to ask you a quick question, which is about a not quick subject. We know that the suicide rate among both active duty and non-active troops is very high. What's the Vermont Guard doing to address that issue now, while the emphasis is not on deployment, but is on personnel who have already been through these?
Yeah. So, you know, resilience training needs to continue. It is not something that just happens during deployments, as you know. And so it's a sad fact that the suicide rates in the military is especially high. And we need to continue to reach out to every soldier, to every airman, to their families, to let them know that that there is help, and that there is no stigmatism to asking for help, and that there are resources to be able to do that. And resiliency training is very high and a very high priority for us.
Major General Stephen Cray commands the Vermont National Guard as Adjutant General. Thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That does it for today. Tomorrow, we were going to be talking about a campaign appearance with Hillary Clinton that Bernie Sanders made today in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. He endorsed her. It's a seminal moment in campaign 2016. We will look at the Sanders endorsement and what his role might be in the Democratic convention. Be sure to tune in for that live tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening today.